Number three, and I'm still in Robertsville. Anyway, to continue, where shall I start? Well, let me go down to the church and the school again, where we used to slide down from the Carlsons. Anyway, one thing I remember particularly, there was some kind of a festival we were going to have. They were putting on a little show for the parents, and the school had made up some kind of a something. I don't know what you call it, but it was over next door in the church hall. There was this church next door, and there was only a church service only once in a while when they could get some itinerant preacher to come through and preach for a while for free board and other considerations that I don't know about. Anyway, the church was a wonderful spot, and in the back there was a long shed, probably about 40, 50 feet long, and when the people came to church, they could park their buggies and horse and buggy, and they would back it in or something, and I guess they'd go head first in, because they had a place where they could put some hay or oats or something. Anyway, it was a great looked something like the carports they have today, because it opened in the back. We loved the place because it had a metal roof, and we used to climb up in the back, a tricky job, but we'd get up on the top and then sit on the top and let go, and then we'd slide down the metal roof and jump to the ground. Anyway, what I want to tell you about the church, you know, it's still there, that church, but it's the Grange Hall now. It's at Grange Hall. We were up there in October this year, 1997. But anyway, this show or something they were put on, it was something about the kids in school were supposed to put on this thing, and they sang Little Jack Horner, who sat in the corner or something or other, that, and you know, and all of a sudden it comes out where, and he stuck in his plum and pulled out a plum and said, "What a big boy am I?" Well, that was the thing. When they came in, they brought in a big laundry basket, you know, sort of an oval thing, and they had it made it up just like a pie, and they had brown wrapping paper across it, and there were holes in it and slots, just like they make when they make a nice apple pie. And they brought it in, and they sang this thing about what a big boy am I. And that was the time when little Freddy, that was me, you know, popped up. He was in the laundry. Pop up through the and break through the brown paper top and say, "What a big boy am I." Only little Freddy jumped the gun, and he came up with, "What a big boy am I," too early, which got a big laugh, I guess. While we're down here near the church, there was a church, tell you about the black bear. And of course that wasn't, this was it was about June or so, and I don't know if it was 1919 or early 1920. Maybe it was 1920 by that time. We were eating our sandwiches at lunch, I guess, when someone came in and started hollering, "Black bear." And we went down the road, and the road between the church there and Riverton, it's 2 miles down to Riverton, there was this big black bear, and he was actually on the side of the road, one side, left side going south. He was eating raspberries or some kind of berries alongside of the road. Boy, we took off. And for the next year, I think, everybody was always, at nighttime, we'd be walking along and thinking that black shadow over there was the black bear. Well, there must be a few more stories about Robertsville, yes. In the summer, I guess it was 1919 or so. Mildred and I used to had a job picking strawberries for the Deming farm next door. H.P. Deming had loads and loads of fields with strawberries, and well, we used to pick strawberries in those little baskets, and we received 2 cents per quart. And gee, we got some enormous money doing that. But also there are other stories about. I want to tell, the hornets. Let me tell about the hornets. The hornets. Well, of course, the kids all went barefoot in the summer, you know. As soon as it got to be warm weather, we all pestered our parents. Can we please go barefoot? Can't we please go barefoot? After a while, reluctantly, they would allow us to do. And it wasn't very long before the soles of our feet would get pretty hard and tough. And we could run right in the macadam blacktop on the road. Didn't bother us at all. But something did bother me was the hornets. I'll tell you, it's not a long story, but it was a painful story. Down in the field, 400 or 500 feet down in the field, which was a hay field, there was an old buggy there. And the reason, who would keep a buggy down in the field? Well, the reason was the farmer boys around us on Halloween night the previous year they do all kinds of tricks. They took one of our old buggies that was in the yard or something and hauled it way down into the field down there. Big joke. And anyway, what happened to little Freddie one time in the following summer? I'm down there, and I'm pretending I'm driving. You know how the boys today get a hold of a steering wheel and they pretending they're driving? Well, little boys in those days didn't know about automobiles, and I jumped up into the buggy there, and it has a whip on there, you know, and I'm slapping the whip on the front of the buggy, and all of a sudden something hit me. I started to yell. Well, apparently in the upholstery in the back of the buggy there was a big hornet's nest, and there are those big black and white ones that build a paper nest. Well, I lit out from there barefoot and going, I bet I've been going 60 miles an hour up through the field, hollering and screaming and hollering, and my folks come running, what in the devil's the matter? They told me afterward that there was a whole cloud of hornets all around me, and I had bare legs, bare feet, and I got out. I bet I had 10 stings all around my legs. And I've always hated those darn things ever since. So, a couple of more. I just happen to remember of a couple of more of the characters in the neighborhood. There was this one man up. I've mentioned him before, Adam Fath. I thought it was F-A-T, Fat, but I think it was F-A-T-H, Fat, that was the way he pronounced it. But he was an old man, and he looked just like Father Time, you know, that has the big scythe there. He looked just like him. I bet his white beard hung to his waistline anyway. And he would, once in a while we'd see him go by. And I think it was Adam Fath is the one who used to ride his bicycle by in the summertime, a bicycle going by. But we had a dog, and I forget the dog's name. It was a Jack, I think it was, something like that. And I remember he used to hate that guy when he went by on a bicycle. And he would run out and bark at him. When one day, Adam Fath was prepared for the dog. He had a little shaker of some kind with red pepper in it. He shook it out on poor Jack's nose, and Jack didn't bother him anymore. He left him alone completely. Now, we remember another character. Well, I didn't really know the man. I just heard his reputation. But Mildred and I once were picked up by some people in a buggy. We were walking along the road towards Deming's, and he wanted to give us a ride. So they gave us a ride, and first thing you know, they decided they better let us off. And we must have been more than a mile from the house and on the road to Winstead. And they dropped us off there, and we dropped us off right in front of Midnight Butler's place. Now, Midnight Butler, he had a reputation. I never met the man. But his place was, it must have been way, way back off from the road. It must have been 500 feet out and all hayfield in front. But Midnight Butler was famous because he was always milking his cows at very, very late in the evening. Very late. He must have had his supper first, and most of the farmers did the milking. They did the milking and cleaned up enough and went in for supper, hopefully by about 6 o'clock or so. But Midnight Butler apparently must have had his supper first, because he got famous for, you could always see the lights out there at midnight, because he was doing this milking at midnight. Hey, that remembers me. Lanterns. That's what they had. They were lanterns. And, of course, in the barns they had those lanterns. And, of course, in the house we had oil lamps. And, of course, it was out there in the country. There was no electricity. And there was no gas lights. And we just oil lamps. You had to put the kerosene in them and so forth. And we didn't get any get into the other kind of lighting until we finally moved to Winstead, I guess. I'm thinking of stories to tell. And I started up again. Well, two more stories. I wanted to tell you about my sled. I had a sled for sliding on the crust and sliding down that my folks bought for me one year. I don't remember when, but boy, do I remember that red sled. And it must have been about 3 feet long. Not very long. I could get my belly on, my feet hung out behind, and it was kind of a nice sled, and I loved it. But that sled was faster than anybody saw anywhere. Anytime we were sliding downhill, I would pass them. I would always pass them. And I remember down at the school one time when I got off the track and went down and there was the stone wall, and I went right up the stone wall and over the top and I dropped about 4 feet to the other side. And anyway, that red sled went with me, and I had it in Winstead when we lived there 2 years, and I had it after that when we moved to Bristol. And I can remember even in Bristol sliding downhill there and coming and passing people that had flexible flyers. That was a wonderful sled. All right, let me give you one more story, because this is a funny one. My sister Mildred, one of her chores every day. Hey, I had chores too. One of my chores was to split the kindling for the fires out in the woodshed. My father would leave the stuff for me to do and so on and so on. And he showed me how to hold the small axe, chopping axe, and how to chop the kindlings up and make small ones out of big ones. And that was my job. But one of Mildred's jobs was to feed the chickens all the time. And a chicken coop, let me tell you about the chicken coop. It was right alongside of the barn. And the barn, the barn. I didn't tell you much about the barn, but the barn, the hay barn, anyway, which was attached to the cow barn, horse barn, the hay barn was very, very high, because they had a tremendous amount of room to put the hay in. And it was all tremendous big beams that held it together, all put in with wooden pegs. And when it was full of hay, it was great to get up, high up in the, and jump into the hay. And of course, in the summertime, after they got all the hay in, they would harvest the hay and bring it in there. It was a great place to jump in the hay. And I remember one time, also, when we had a lot of visitors, I guess some of those people from Brooklyn came up or something, we would sleep in the hay. That is, we let the people have the bedrooms, and we'd give the family would go out and sleep in the hay. And hey, that was good. Now, that was the year the folks came up from Brooklyn or somewhere. Some friends of my father's, Eddie Holder and someone else. But one old man, his name was Barty, while he was there, he died. He died in the house. And I can remember, that's the first time I saw a coffin, when they were carrying the coffin out of the place. Let's get back to when I started to tell you about Mildred and the chicken coop. Mildred came running in one day. She was out to feed the chickens, and she came back screaming and hollering and said, "Mama, you know, when I opened up the barrel where the feed is in it, and there's a big rat in there. How the heck in there?" Anyway, my mother was very resourceful about all kinds of things, you know. And she said, "Oh, get the cat and open up the top of the barrel and throw the cat in." And my sister did that. And well, what an explosion there was then. I think the rat and the cat and everything came flying straight up in the air out of the barrel. That's a true story. I don't suppose you believe me, but that really happened up in Robertsville back in 1919, somewhere around that time. It's 1920 now, and I think it's time that we went down to Winsted to where we lived there at the house of my dad, and mother bought at 120 that was 120 Williams Avenue in Winsted. It was a most wonderful, wonderful house. Oh, I love that house. It was so quaint, so many things to it. And I'll tell you about it in a few minutes. First, let me take a breath. Well, here we are at 120 Williams Avenue in Winsted now. And it started in 1920, the fall, I guess, and we stayed here till about the fall, early fall, September of 1922. We were here 2 years. Anyway, the house, it was a beautiful house. And ever since then, once in a while I go to Winsted going through, I stop in to just look at that house. It was square and big, two families, and the porches ran all the way across the front of the house, the first floor and the second floor. We always were in the second floor. And we rented the first floor out. That's a good thing to do, you know, because you have income from the rent, and it helps to pay for the taxes and other upkeep and things like that. It was a wonderful place and had an enormous deep lot that must have gone 400, 500 feet deep. Just a field up there and a couple of apple trees, I remember. But the house itself, oh my goodness, the house was, I just loved it. We were on the second floor and we had a living room and a kitchen and a parlor and a bathroom. And the bathroom was the funniest darn thing because there was no direct window outside. But they had a skylight, like way, way up in the attic area, where you could ventilate the place, and you could open that window up. It wasn't a skylight, really. It was a window on the side, but it was high up, and you could open it and close it with a long, long chain. I remember it was and it had a nice bathtub that you could loll in and swim around in. The house, the wonderful part, right near the bathroom door was a stairway. You went up to the attic. And the attic was a wonderful place to play. On a rainy day, you could spend all day up there playing in the attic. There were several big beams that crossed through the middle of it that were, these beams must have been about 12 inches square, and they went across. And we could hang from the beam, we could have swings and so forth, and all kinds of other play things up there. And there was all kinds of things that people in the past had left there. And you could open up, there was a window, windows on the ends, and then windows that went out onto the roof of the porch. You could open up the window and walk right out onto the roof of the porch. And then if you went around to the side, there was the roof with the valley. It was a valley of the roof with a metal roof. It had a lot of metal roofs in those days. And I could walk up the metal roofs right up to the peak, and I could sit in it and slide down. And that attic was the most wonderful place. I enjoyed it so much. Well, now, let's see. Now, the backyard, oh, there was a shed there, and where we could keep tools and things like that in. And in the shed, lo and behold, I found a pair of skis. And they were homemade skis. They weren't the commercial. Somebody had made them laboriously. They were a little wider than the normal skis. They were something like the ones they have for ski jumping today. But the tips had been, you could see they had been, steamed or something to turn the tips up. And they were great. Well, they were just the old fashioned ones, were just a loop. I learned to ski with those. We put them up. Of course, the backyard went up hill, slightly uphill, so I get up at the top of that hill, and I would slide down and through the yard and out and end up out in the street. And that's where I really learned. And I used my red sled, of course, to zoom down there. That was a wonderful part of that, about that thing. There's so many other things about that, let me tell you about the school. The school we went to was the fourth school, which was about a quarter of a mile down Hinsdale Avenue, and it was called the fourth school, and it was wooden. There was at least it was wooden in the portion that I went into. There was a new brick building alongside of it, but that was in, I don't know what grades they were, but I was in the fourth grade. And the teacher's name was, Miss DeMars. And when I got to be in the fifth grade the next year, it was Miss Holland. Anyway, I loved the school. We did very, very well. I had a lot of friends. I can still, I still have a picture of that fourth grade. And I still have a picture of it. And I can look at a picture and remember some of the people. There was Russell Stark. He was a good friend of mine. And his sister, Pauline Stark. And I used to joke with her a lot. She always had a blue skirt and a white midi blouse or something. And then there was a girl that was the most prettiest girl, Isabel Warner. She had curls, and they were all curled up down shoulders or so, and a beautiful black eyes and dark face. Oh, I fell in love with her. Then there was Frank Shea, I remember. There's some others there, and I can tell their pictures, but I can't remember their names. Well, I'm back again. I had a sneeze. Now, there's no logical way to tell these things that I remember left, but I'll try. Let me tell you about the neighbors first there on Whitney and on Williams Avenue. First next door to the north were the Remingtons, and they had a new Ford car, and the Baldwins were on the other side. Mrs. Baldwin was famous for being a very clean lady. She spent all her day long polishing the floors and cleaning and washing and all that stuff. And when I noticed, when her husband came home, he had to take his shoes off outside. He could not walk in with his shoes. That was one of the restrictions. She didn't like us very much because my mother and dad had children. And she didn't like children because she had none of her own. And anyway, she kept complaining. If we went over on their lawn, would she please get those children off her lawn because we will wear a bar spot. And so we kept away from her more or less. Although people downstairs were, I remember, Di Martino, just a man and his wife. And he had a little limp. I don't know why, but I don't know what work he did, but he would come home every night, and he got me to go with him once. He had a side business where he was manufacturing furniture polish. It was called DeMartino's Furniture Polish, I know. Now, he needed these 4-ounce bottles to put the polish in that he concocted himself. And anyway, so every once in a while he would go to the dump and he would take me with him. I don't know if we went in a buggy Yeah, no, he didn't have a car. He must have gone in a buggy. We used to go to the Winstead dump and pour over all the stuff through there looking for 4-ounce bottles. And they're just the bottle that people got prescriptions from the doctor were in these 4-ounce bottles. And so we would find quite a few of them. Sometimes they'd be a little burned from the fires, but he'd pick them all home and he'd wash them up and use them to put his polish in. Now, more of the neighbors... I had a close friend who, the Simmonses, they lived on a side street, Curtis Street, and my particular friend my age was Tubby Simmons, and Harold, I guess, was his first name, yeah. And he had an older brother and an older sister, and they had this house the back end came up to our property. But I was real friendly with him, and we even built we were going to have a telephone between our house and their house, so we strung he had a lot of wire, copper wire, and we strung it from his house all the way down to my attic. That's another thing we used in the attic, and hooked it up to a tin can, and a paper over to something, and it never worked. We never were able to communicate. But anyway, Tubby Simmons and I had a lot of fun together and did things. But and particularly, we'd go up to his house in the fall. This was in the fall. I think it was the first fall I was there. And we'd wait until 5 o'clock, because at 5 o'clock, his neighbor just below was a policeman, a bachelor, too. He lived all alone. And we'd wait till 5 o'clock, he'd be getting up and locking his door and going out with his full uniform and a club and all that stuff to go to work. And we'd wait till he's down the street, and then we'd sneak into his backyard and we'd pick up some of the nice red Baldwin apples that falled off of his tree. He has beautiful trees all along. We used to get those red apples, and they were so juicy and good and cold. There's nothing like stolen apples. They always taste so much better, don't you think? Now, also down the street was Ward Peets, another friend, and I think it was in the summertime I got more friendly with him, and they used to have a hose down there so we could put our bathing suits on and get sprayed with the water. Also, they took me, they had a cottage up at Highland Lake, up on the hill, west of Winstead. They had a cottage, and they took me up there swimming. The first time I'd ever been swimming. His name was Ward Peets. Anyway, my mother had to buy me a bathing suit, I remember. It was black with little white trimmings on it. But that's the first time I ever been swimming, and that was in Highland Lake. And also I remember Ward Peets because I used to go with him to the YMCA swimming in the summertime in the pool there. Because I remember the instructor there taught me a trick on how to take, he used to use a towel, but put your two hands on the towel and tie a knot in it without getting your hands tangled up in it. You know, he showed us how to do that. And ever since then, I've been teaching people how to do that. I could still do it too, you know. And who else? Oh my goodness. I haven't told you about the Funks. The Funks lived across the street from me. Now, the man of the family was nicknamed by the neighbors, was called Punky Funk. And it's the truth. He was the punkiest, dirtiest man you can ever imagine. His face was always dark and smudged and black like he'd been delivering coal. And maybe he did that for a living. I don't know what he did for a living, but he was kind of a shady character, I would say. He had trucks. And several of them that I know, and he had a horse and buggy, and during the last part of the war, he was famous for having some contraband black market sugar. His barn in the back was stacked to the roof with bags of sugar. And it got so heavy after a while that the floor caved in. And I didn't see any of the sugar. It's just a story about it. But he had several. He had three children that I know of. There was an older girl and an older boy. And there was a boy my age called Francis Funk, I guess. And we used to do things together, all kinds. And his brother, I don't know the brother's name. But he introduced me to smoking. The brother used to pick up cigarettes down in, I don't know, there were two kinds I remember. Sweet Caporals was one, and another ones were called Black and White. Anyway, he had cigarettes, and he got us once in a while to light up a cigarette smoking. Boy, what a thing that was. So I got the idea I should try it myself. And he gave me several cigarettes, and of course I hid them. I hid them outside somewhere, and then it rained, and they got wet, and the paper all peeled off them. So I what a loss. So I got an idea. I got one of my father's pipes. My dad always smoked a pipe, you know. My dad did. Anyway, I got one of his pipes, and I stuffed the old dried up cigarette tobacco in it, and I went up in the backyard, way up, and sat with my back up against an apple tree there and lit up the pipe.